This is Truth Frequency Radio.
The wicked ones, obviously under heavy Masonic influence.
Hello, hello, hello. Welcome, ladies and gentlemen. Thank you guys for tuning in. Once again, good morning, good evening, good whatever it is, wherever you are, I guess. We'll cover all the bases all at once there. Thank you guys again for tuning in today. This is, of course, the Red Pill Reports radio broadcast. My name's JD. We are live right now, ladies and gentlemen. Today is Wednesday, the 18th of February, and we're about halfway through the week. So congratulations to all of you out there who've made it this far. We're about halfway there. Anyway, appreciate all of you guys tuning in. Love seeing the familiar faces in the chat room. Lex Luthor, Obsidian, thank you guys for being in there early this morning. It's a great opportunity, guys, when we're live to get into the chat room at Truth Frequency Radio. First of all, it's a great way to listen to the show, but it's always fun to get involved with some of the other listeners out there. You can make new friends. There's always some interesting commentary back and forth about the articles that we go over, things like that. And it's a great place to post questions for our guests when we have them. For you guys who are new to the show, we do a two-hour show live every day, Monday through Friday. First hour, we go over all the pertinent news in the world and try and figure out just what in the heck is going on. And then we usually bring in a wonderful guest for the second hour. We talk about a little bit more in-depth and specific topics all over the board, though, all kinds of different things. Today, Rick Rozoff is going to be joining us. First of all, Rick Rozoff, probably one of my favorite five people on the planet at this point. He is incredibly gracious with his time. He's taken some time out to join us today. We're going to talk about this whole Ukraine situation. He's a NATO expert, so he is very good at figuring out what's going on with NATO. And, you know, this whole situation in the Ukraine right now is really, really becoming a quagmire. And, you know, we've got this new, facet with Greece, being kind of thrown into the mix, right? So there's a lot to talk about here and a lot of stuff going on behind the scenes. And, I'm just not that smart. So I love the fact that we can reach out to somebody like Rick who can come in and say, okay, this is what is actually going on. And these are some predictions that we can look at, as probably being accurate given the history of the events there so far. So, it's going to be a really good conversation. If you guys have questions again for Rick Rozoff regarding NATO, regarding any of the militarization expansion going on around the world right now, please get them formulated in your mind space and stick them into the chat room there. Man, I just love you guys in the chat room. Again, can't thank you guys enough. I want to say a shout out again to PRC News. Poet Fisherman's in there. One of two just joined. Let's see how many people we can get in the chat room today. I got to say, too, yesterday's show, Kev Baker's show. Kev Baker did an absolutely amazing show yesterday, ladies and gentlemen. And if you missed it, I would highly, highly recommend going over to True Frequency and getting into his archives, because he interviewed Sabine McNeil yesterday. She's an advocate for all of these poor children that are being kidnapped and ritually abused in the UK. And a lot of other networks shied away from the story and went so far as to call the videos that kind of brought this whole thing to light, calling it a hoax. And, we've run it by some people. I've run it by a couple of my friends with some psychology background. And there's no hoax here. I mean, these kids are, speaking about ridiculously horrific things just as simply as you would talk about going and picking up some groceries at the grocery store. And that understanding, the understanding of what's going on there is only because, they're so conditioned. You know, you can absolutely say, that these kids have been abused and then have been conditioned to the point where they don't even recognize it as abuse anymore. So, major high watermark for the network yesterday on Kev's show. Fantastic, fantastic interview, with Sabine McNeil. And I look forward to, those guys staying on top of this issue. Again, you know, we got to expose the evils that are going on around us. If you don't isolate the problem, we can't come up with a solution. So, again, tune into that show. Go back and find those archives and check that out. If we can do it, there is, I know, a pretty big, what's the word I'm looking for? One of those things that you sign and a whole bunch of people sign. What is that called? Man, my brain is locked up today, guys. Sorry. Anyway, there's a big motion going on right now to get a whole bunch of signatures collected so that we can get some criminal charges against these people. And when Kev was on the show yesterday, he put that link in the chat room, but I imagine that link is probably someplace near the archives. I'm just guessing there. But if not, if somebody sends me the link to that choice.org, I think is what it is, petition. That's the word I was looking for, that petition. I will put it in the chat room again. Thank you, Lex. Petition, yes. Wow. See, listeners are so smart. God, I don't know what I would do without you guys out there. It's like, anybody else want to host the show today? Thanks, everybody. Petition. Yes, thank you. Thank you, guys. I appreciate that. So, yes, I'll see if I can get that link from Kev again and shoot it over into the chat room for you guys that are in there right now. Because, again, I went and signed it immediately. I didn't realize there was a petition going on. And absolute kudos to him. Thank you. Kev's on Skype right now, so he's going to send me that link, and I'll get it to you guys in the chat room. Please go sign this thing. I'm not a huge, get on board with petition thing. There's only two that I've really signed. They're Greg Morse's that you can find on our page. It has to do with this whole mortgage crisis issue. If you guys haven't signed that yet, you're way behind the curve. That's a big thing that we can all do to actually make a difference on this mortgage crisis issue. And everybody out there is affected by that, guys. Again, that petition link is right at the top of redpillreports.com. And I'm going to send this one to all you guys in the chat room right now that Kev just sent me, because again, those videos are so hard to watch, ladies and gentlemen, because those kids are not just talking about sexual abuse. I mean, they're talking about some of the most horrific things I've ever heard kids talk about, and it's just absolutely astounding. So again, really appreciate everybody who's getting on board with the petition and trying to get some resolution, because this is an issue that they're going to keep out of the news cycle. I mean, I'm telling you right now, we haven't heard anything about the pedophile thing. You know, and I was talking to Kevin in the chat room last night while they were airing the interview, and I'm thinking, man, enter false flag, you know, cue false flag distraction in 5, 4, 3, 2, 1. Here we go. They're going to have to do something, because this issue of the pedophilia ring and this ritual abuse, it's been going on for decades. It's absolutely unbelievable, ladies and gentlemen. So again, go listen to Kev's show from yesterday. High watermark for the network. Fantastic work by him and his affiliates there. Can't say enough about that. And, okay, let's get away from the awful, horrible stuff there. But again, if you guys, saw that link to the petition in the chat room, please go sign it. Really would appreciate that. That'd make me feel a little better about the world in which we live. Speaking of feeling better about the world in which we live, tomorrow's guest will be Deborah Tabaris. She's absolutely astoundingly amazing when it comes to battling against this Agenda 21 stuff. She's always uncovering new issues. I watched her in a video interview that she did about a week and a half ago, talking about the the disbursement of pharmaceuticals via airplanes, very similar to the geoengineering program, but much, much, much scarier as far as I'm concerned. So I imagine we'll probably touch on that tomorrow. So I definitely want people to tune in for that. And then Andrew Gauze is going to be here again on Friday. So we're going to talk about the economy. Obviously, again, Greece just seems to be the topic of discussion with just about every guest that we have, from either an economic or a geopolitical or a rah-rah go team kind of standpoint. I mean, it's just, they're going to come up. We're going to be talking about Greece a lot today and probably for the rest of the week. So, we'll try and get to the bottom of what's going on with that with Rick today. And then we'll try and get to the bottom of what's going on with the economy on Friday with Andrew Gauze. So again, appreciate all you guys being here. Appreciate everybody who is, thank you, poets. Thank you, for signing that petition, brother. Appreciate that. And again, Erica Organ joined the chat room today. One of my favorite people out there. Truth be told, also in there. I think I've shouted out to everybody. Thank you guys for being in the chat room again. Thank you guys for supporting redpillreports.com as well. Checking out the site, checking out the radio show, and passing it around to your friends. It's definitely very important for us to try and get these messages out and spread around. So I just wanted to thank you guys who are doing that. Okay, that's probably enough of a ramble for this morning. And there's lots of international news to cover. So let's just jump right in, shall we? First and most important, the United States government right now sanctioning the deployment of over 4,000 ground troops. Let's just start that again. The United States government right now today sanctioning the deployment of over 4,000 ground troops to be stationed in Kuwait immediately. That's you can read into that. Boots on the ground, ladies and gentlemen. Boots on the ground going back to Kuwait immediately. This brigade, which will be equipped with tanks and Bradley fighting vehicles, will be the largest U.S. ground troop force currently stationed in the Middle East. Good morning, Eric. So largest ground forces currently stationed in the Middle East. It appears that the armed servicemen and women are going to be sent overseas to engage in combat missions against ISIS. This is not advising missions. They are specifically saying combat missions against ISIS. So these soldiers are going to, soldiers are going to be coming from Fort Carson, Colorado's 3rd Brigade Combat Team. They've had their deployment ceremony just 2 days after President Obama sent his authorization for the use of military force to Congress. So again, these people there at Fort Carson, no stranger to being deployed, but they have been planning on deployment here for a while. It says they have been training for over a year for this particular mission. So if you think that this is just something that randomly happened, I don't think so. I think ISIS is probably has a lot to do with regaining control over Iraq. I just don't know. But anyway, the U.S. military right now has a brigade stationed in Kuwait. We've had a brigade stationed in Kuwait since 2011 and are currently utilizing those troops to assist in training allied forces meant to oppose the Islamic State. Of course, they're better known as ISIS. So again, we've got a brigade there now. We've had them there since 2011. And those people are the ones who are doing the training assistance and the advising, quote unquote, on the ground. But again, this new battalion of 4,000 ground troops being sent to Kuwait, quote unquote, immediately. This is going to be ground troops, again, engaging in combat missions against ISIS. So, you know, I think, Lex, I think you're probably hitting the nail on the head there. Iraq War number 3, here we go. And then some ancillary fallout as well. There was a speech given by Egyptian President al-Sisi over the weekend at his presidential palace in Cairo. And he said on Sunday that Egypt now reserves the right to respond in any way it sees fit to the Islamic State's beheading of 21 Egyptians in neighboring Libya. So again, following the public release of video over the weekend, which did appear to show the beheading of 21 captured Egyptians by a militant group that is reportedly aligned with ISIS, operating inside of Libya. Egypt immediately launched airstrikes aimed at the group early on Monday and vowed that more would follow. So according to Reuters, this is the first time that Egypt has confirmed launching airstrikes against the group in neighboring Libya. So again, now we're another nation dropping bombs on Libya here, showing again that President al-Sisi is ready to expand his fight against the Islamic militancy beyond Egypt's borders. And Egypt said that the dawn strike in which Libya's air force also participated hit Islamic State camps, training sites, and weapons storage areas in Libya, where civil conflict has plunged the country into near anarchy, no wonder, and created havens for the militias. The militias, of course, are these, they're moderate. They're moderates. That's what they are. They're people who we're arming, essentially, ladies and gentlemen. Anyway, a Libyan Air Force commander said that between 40 and 50 militants were killed in the attack. There are casualties among individuals, ammunition, and the Islamic State communication centers, according to, Air Force commanders there from Libya, and more airstrikes will be carried out today and tomorrow. Tomorrow, according to this article, would be today that I'm talking to you right now. So again, Egypt currently right now still carrying out airstrikes inside the sovereign nation of Libya against ISIS because of this alleged kidnapping. So if ISIS is not real, it has certainly done its accomplished its goal of getting everybody riled up. I mean, look, Jordan is way on board now. Even their king is flying sorties. Saudi Arabia is on board now, and now we've got Egypt on board, and everything seems to be focusing on Libya and Syria here. So, and of course, now we just had the story of America getting ready to send another battalion of troops over to Kuwait. So I don't know. Maybe ISIS's days are numbered. It's difficult to say. Okay, let's talk a little bit about Ukraine right now. We're obviously going to talk quite a bit about this with Rick Rozoff here in about 45 minutes. But there are some stories coming out, and we're going to have to talk about this really quickly. Late last night, Poroshenko came out and said that he is now planning an organized retreat from Debaltseve. Debaltseve, ladies and gentlemen. I stayed up all night repeating that word just so I could say it correctly today because of my crash and burns yesterday. But anyway, Poroshenko, obviously the new president of the Ukraine there, announcing now this planned and organized retreat from Debaltseve. And, that's a pretty telling statement here. Okay. So what we're talking about is the city that is actually in between Luhansk and Donetsk and is a pretty heavily rebel controlled area right now. Ukraine mounted an offensive. They sent like 5,000 guys to try and flush everybody out from Debaltseve, and they were unsuccessful. And Ukraine has not really come on record in terms of Kiev and said, hey, you know, we've got 5,000 troops there and they're incredibly surrounded right now and we're not going to get them back. Part of the Minsk Accord was to create this green corridor to allow these troops to basically leave with their tails between their legs from the area, because they're not the separatists are not going to give up this city. It's just not going to happen. This is a very strategic rail center area. It's just not something that they're going to give up. So again, Poroshenko at this point kind of conceding defeat in that area. And now this morning, the Ukrainian armed forces, together with the National Guard, completed an operation for the planned and organized withdrawal from Debaltseve. And Poroshenko said this in an audio message released late last night. So again, rebels say the current ceasefire negotiated by Ukraine, Russia, and Germany and France at a summit in Belarus does not apply to Debaltseve, because that links the two rebel-controlled regions of the eastern Ukraine, Donetsk and Lugansk. So again, they're not going to give this up. And what was funny is the leader of one of the rebel groups, I think it was the head from the Lugansk side, he said, of course we're going to go along with these Minsk Accords. The Minsk Accords call for the removal of foreign troops and heavy arms, right? So sure, we're more than willing to allow these idiots from Kiev to leave our area, because that's obviously what the Minsk Accord is all about. We're not foreign troops. We live here. And I thought that was pretty funny. Anyway, and totally correct. You know, that's what they're saying right now, is they're the rebels are like, well, we'll totally go along with this. But what your eyes are outlining is that you guys need to leave. And that's essentially now what Poroshenko has decided to do. So I think he's taking a lot of international flack for not pulling those guys out earlier, or not even acknowledging the fact that they are there. But again, this Debaltseve area is going to continue to be a stumbling block in this whole EU Kiev crisis mitigation thing that's going on right now. There's still fighting apparently going on in some other areas. The RT, there was an RT crew there yesterday in Donetsk, and they came under some pretty heavy artillery fire while they were traversing an airport runway. They were trying to get across a runway to where some of the rebel troops were held up in some of the hangars there, and started taking some pretty significant incoming mortar fire. Nobody really stood up and said, you know, who they were, but these guys from RT, clearly, you know, dressed like press, with the bulletproof jackets on and the helmets on that say press on them, but somebody was shooting at them. So again, the ceasefire situation there, I think, is tenuous at best. So we'll just kind of have to see. And again, I think Rick Rozoff, in a little while will have quite a bit more, insight on this. So I'm hoping, that he will be able to join us. Aw, Shark, you're so nice. Thank you. I'm telling you guys, if you're not in the chat room at Truth Frequency Radio, you're missing a lot of great conversation, a lot of good people in there, a lot of good people to meet. Shark, nice to see you this morning too. Thank you for being here. Okay, two of the FBI's most wanted cyber criminals were caught in Pakistan. This story does not make sense to me, ladies and gentlemen, which is one of the reasons I want to cover it. So these two individuals named on the FBI's most wanted list of suspected cyber criminals have been captured by authorities in their native Pakistan, according to local officials. These two gentlemen, both apprehended in Karachi during a pre-dawn raid on Saturday, and an official with the Federal Investigation Agency, which is Pakistan's equivalent to the FBI, told reporters this over the weekend. Authorities in the United States say that these two gentlemen were involved with an international crime ring that scammed telecommunication companies out of an estimated $50 million between 2008 and 2012. So federal arrest warrants were made out for the pair in 2012, and in 2013, their names were added to the FBI's cyber most wanted list, along with a reward bounty of about $50,000 apiece. So again, they were on the most wanted list of the FBI, and they have been successfully arrested there in Pakistan. So what in the world? Okay, American authorities say that one of these gentlemen operated a company called LinkedTel, which was a business that purported to provide customers with premium telephone services such as adult entertainment, chat lines, and psychic hotlines, through which he employed his other guy, who was the business manager. And according to the federal indictments filed in the United States, those calls were placed using hacked telephone systems belonging to large corporations that had become compromised. And so it was a really big scheme. But here's my question. Here's what I don't understand about this. These guys stole $50 million, which is hardly even a rounding error when you consider what these criminal banking cartels are up to with the Forex rigging and the LIBOR rate rigging and the derivative market. I mean, we're talking $50,000 or $50 million is how much these two guys stole. And that landed them on the FBI's most wanted cyber watch list. That seems a little ridiculous. I think there's quite a bit more to this story than we're being told, because if those are the most threatening cyber criminals that the FBI is paying attention to right now, people who are stealing long-distance telephone services. I hate to break it to you guys, but you're looking in the wrong directions. I mean, what about all the Stuxnet stuff? What about the all these potential you know, attacks on our electric system? What about all the actual threats that are out there as opposed to $50 million being taken from a freaking long-distance telephone provider? I just thought that that was really unusual that that one act would get these guys on the top of the cyber criminal FBI most wanted list. That doesn't, it just doesn't make, yes, exactly. My good friend Robert just says more reason to control the web. Problem, reaction, solution. Problem, reaction, solution. I've heard that before. I don't know where. Maybe we should write that down. Okay. President of Kurdistan, Barzani. I don't know if you guys are paying attention to what's going on in Iraq right now, but we're sending more troops there because ISIS. Remember, we just talked about that a few minutes ago. Anyway, Barzani, he is the president of the Kurdistan region, which is kind of semi-autonomous. He did confirm this week that paramilitary Kurdish Peshmerga forces have managed to liberate about 15,000 square kilometers of territories once seized by ISIS. So, very, very good news for Iraq in that respect, and very, very good stuff for the Kurdish region there. So, you know, I don't know how bad this ISIS situation actually is in Iraq. I really wish that we had some listeners there and somebody could, get in touch with us and tell us, you know, what's actually going on there right now. And maybe if you're one of these troops that's going to be, taken over there from Fort Collins, you can get back in touch with us. Let us know what the conditions on the ground are actually like over there. But, again, it looks like from at least the Peshmerga perspective up in Kurdistan region there, things are looking a lot better against ISIS. So, there you go. Okay. There's a couple other stories here right now that I'm not going to cover really quickly. There's, some pretty substantial financial bigwigs out there talking about some pretty grave repercussions for NATO if Greece were to turn to Russia. Who are we talking to today? Rick Rozoff, NATO genius. So we're going to ask him about some of these repercussions. And really, I want to know how big of a monkey wrench Greece is right now in the crux of NATO, because I think there's a lot going on here. And then there's another story that broke last night, which I also think will have implications that I want to talk to Rick about. But the Ukraine right now, and of course we're talking about the junta side, the junta government there, they've refused right now to extradite the ex-Georgian president Saakashvili. Saakashvili, you may remember, was part of the charge into Ossetia back a few years ago. And so being charged in Georgia with all kinds of fraud and corruption and things like that, and he has fled. He has been living in exile under United States, and he just took a very important position in the Ukraine. So we're going to have to talk about this because obviously there's a lot more to that. I want to move away from those, and we'll talk a little bit about that with Rick when he comes on the show in just a little while. Moving over into some national news here right now, and we'll see what's going on. There has been a sheriff from Arizona speaking out against Barack Obama, and it's not really very surprising, but this particular sheriff, his name is Babu. He was America's 2011 Sheriff of the Year, and he was also an Iraq War veteran, but he testified before a committee earlier this week, the House Judiciary Committee on the issue of illegal immigration. And what he said was that despite Barack Obama saying that the border is actually now quite a bit safer than it ever has been, he says that's not exactly true. He actually testified again before the committee saying that between 88,000 and 123,000 illegal aliens are apprehended in the Tucson sector, which is one of 9 Border Patrol zones along the U.S.-Mexico border every single year. So on average there, about 105,000 illegal aliens just in that one area, which is a total of about 262 border miles. And he also goes on to say that between 17 and 30% of those apprehended, they already have a criminal record here in the United States. So that really statistically kind of flies in the face of Mr. Obama's stance that the border is actually safer now than it was before. So, again, we really do support these constitutional sheriffs who are stepping up and actually doing something correct. That's what we need more of in this country, ladies and gentlemen. Okay, we are kind of coming up on a break. I didn't print the news out right now, so you guys will have to go to redpillreports.com and check out the show section. You'll find out a little bit more about Rick Rozoff and how to find his website, you can always just do a real quick search for Stop NATO, and the first one is going to be Rick's website. And I highly recommend going there because it's updated almost daily about everything, and it's not just about what's going on in the Ukraine. NATO has expanded to Southeast Asia. It's expanded into Africa. I mean, it's a big to-do these days, and lots of news coming out. So his website is fantastic. But again, if you go to the show page, you can find Rick's website and some of the other information about him. But you'll also be able to see all of these articles that we cover every day, or try to cover every single day. And I usually can't get through all of them, but there's a lot of amazing. We are going to cover some health stuff today, guys. I neglected to get into some health stuff. We've got a little bit of tech news today, but there are some good health things that I want to talk about. Mostly, I want to talk about artificial sugar today and artificial sweeteners and things like that, because, well, I got somebody in my family that seems to love them, and we're just going to break it down for these people. Anyway, so that's what's going on in when we come back from this quick 3-minute break. I do got to give a quick props to Tennessee right now. Tennessee legislators this week filed a bill to directly take on the NSA spying program, and they're doing almost the exact same thing that Utah is trying to do, essentially by establishing a bill that would withhold all of the material support from any federal agency engaged in warrantless surveillance. But I didn't realize that NSA has got a pretty big operation going on there in Tennessee. I thought it was that they just had this huge data center out in Utah, and it was commendable that Utah, you know, tried to pass some laws to cut the water supply off and do things like that. But there is a very large NSA facility in Tennessee that's being used to do code breaking and things like that. I had no idea. So Tennessee right now is stepping up to get some bills passed to try and, again, limit the material support from any of those agencies that are, you know, doing this whole warrantless wiretapping thing. So good for them. If the federal government's not going to do it, it's time for the states to step up. Yes, equal for your coffee. Very bad, Eric. Very, very bad. Okay, we got a 3-minute break, guys. We'll come back. Lots more news to cover. Rick Rose off in about a half an hour. Love you guys in the chat room. We'll see you in just a few minutes.
Chris and Sheree Geo here, founders of Truth Frequency Radio. We just wanted to take a moment to thank all of you for making TFR the biggest and the best independent radio station out there.
When we first entered the alternative media scene in 2009, we were really taken aback by the amount of infighting, backbiting, fear-based reporting, and ego-driven personalities. That's when we knew we had to set ourselves apart and set a new standard in broadcasting. And thus, TFR was conceived as a listener-supported station with no corporate or outside influence and limited commercial interruptions.
You can support our efforts by signing up for a VIP membership at truthfrequencyradio.com/signup or by making a donation at truthfrequencyradio.com/donate.
For less than $4 a month, you can ensure that TFR continues broadcasting for years to come. Real people, real radio.
Wherever you are, make it TFR.
Time and time again.
You need to come here and help us. We need assistance. Please.
Those we should be able to depend on let us down.
Federal and state and local officials saying help is on the way. Well, the folks here in Bell Harbor say show me.
Don't depend on the government to save you. Take action now so that you're prepared for the next disaster with MyPatriotSupply.com. Get the best prices on storable food, non-GMO seeds, water filtration devices, home canning equipment, survival and self-reliance books, and more at MyPatriotSupply.com. Call 866-229-0927.
We are hurting down here, and we need help immediately.
Before it's time to survive, it's time to prepare. MyPatriotSupply.com. MyPatriotSupply.com.
Nutritious food is real body armor. It builds muscle, burns fat, improves digestion, and feeds the entire body the nutrients it needs. Did you know the U.S. government banned the hemp plant from growing in the United States and classified it as a Schedule I drug to hide it behind the marijuana plant? People have been confused about this plant for over 80 years, and many still don't know what hemp is. So now you know hemp is not marijuana, and marijuana is not hemp. They are different varieties of the same species. Hemp U.S. HempUSA.org wants the world to know these basic facts and to help people understand that hemp protein powder is the best-kept health secret you need to know about. Remember, hemp protein powder contains 53% protein, is gluten-free, anti-inflammatory, non-GMO, and is loaded with nutrients. Call 888-910-4367, 888-910-4367, and see what our powder, seeds, and oil can do for you. Only at HempUSA.org.
Exposing pro-capitalism with Jason Earp.
Sundays on Truth Frequency Radio.
Welcome back to the broadcast. Ladies and gentlemen, thank you guys for sticking with us through that 3-minute break, and thank all of you guys in the chat room. I have to say, chat room guys, when I go to break or when the radio show goes to break, it kicks me out of the chat room. And for some reason, the chat room doesn't let me scroll back to comments that were made while I wasn't logged in. So if you guys say something to me over the break and I don't, you know, comment on it, it's because I haven't seen it and I'm not trying to ignore you. That just seems to be the way the chat room goes right now. So again, really love all you guys being in there. Very cool to have the instant feedback and to be able to talk with you guys directly about what is going on in the world. I want to get back into the story about Tennessee right now, because again, I didn't know that the NSA had a secret facility in Tennessee, but in Oak Ridge, Tennessee, apparently there has been a long-standing, very secretive NSA computing facility. According to the NSA researcher James Bamford, the NSA runs the most data it gathers from code breaking to word captures through their computers at Oak Ridge, and I had no idea about that. Did you guys know that? I didn't know that. But anyway, this state bill, which is the State Senate Bill 782 and the House Bill 679, which is the companion bill going through the House. Both of those have just been introduced this week, and I would highly recommend if you guys are in Tennessee there to get in touch with your congressman and let them know that you are supportive of that, because again, if the federal government is not going to step up and rein in these guys, which it appears that they're not going to do, the states have got to do it. You know what I mean? So good on Tennessee. Get involved with that if you were there. Let's see here. Obsidian, I don't know. Somebody's asking about whether or not that has anything to do with the 10 FEMA regions. I guess, I'm not really sure what it is that you're asking there, Obsidian. Are you saying you think that there might be a data center in each one of the 10 different FEMA regions there? Is that what you're asking? I'm not sure. I'll come back to that. Let's see. A man in his 50s was arrested for making threats on Tuesday to an Islamic State center in an Islamic center in Austin and a restaurant specializing in Middle Eastern food, according to Austin police. No bombs were discovered at the locations in different parts of the city, so it was nothing actually happened in terms of this. But again, man was arrested for making these bomb threats against an Islamic center, and I don't encourage you guys going out in there and doing that, and especially Middle Eastern food. We don't have enough good Middle Eastern food around. We don't need to be blowing up these restaurants, guys. That's just stupid. So anyway, bomb squads came, responded, didn't see anything, and this guy apparently mentally disturbed. But so that's what happened in Austin. No harm, no foul, except for the guy who is going to jail. Barack Obama has now vowed to appeal the judge's ruling. We talked about it yesterday. The judge in Texas coming out to block Obama's order for the the protection of the 4 million undocumented foreigners from deportation. Remember, we had that big debacle with the executive order that Barack Obama signed, and then there were, I think, 19 states that signed on to a lawsuit to try and get an injunction, and that injunction was granted late Monday night in Texas, and we saw that coming out from a Twitter there, from Twitter. And anyway, so the judge did block it, did create that injunction. So that that entire program was supposed to go into effect today. That's on the 18th of February here today, Wednesday. So again, now that this injunction has been granted, the deportation of these people should continue, but we'll see exactly what happens in terms of how the agencies respond. But again, Barack Obama now saying that he's going to appeal this ruling, and that he would like to use common sense policies to help fix our broken immigration system. I wasn't aware that our system was actually broken, but apparently, according to Barack Obama, it is. Hopefully, this injunction will hold, and we can start taking some power away from these people, get back into a system of checks and balances. Man, wouldn't that be something? Be a world I'd want to live in. Okay. What do you guys think about Netanyahu coming to address Congress coming up here next month? There's been a poll that was released, and apparently a large majority of Americans think that this request by the Republican congressional leaders was a little bit taboo, probably should not have happened. The nationwide poll actually was released yesterday and showed about 63% of Americans say it was a bad move for the congressional leadership to extend the invitation without giving President Barack Obama a heads up that it was coming, and only 33% said that it was the right thing to do. I cannot imagine a world in which we would allow a war criminal like this to come and address the American people, because again, that's going to bolster support for his idiocy, his and also would kind of show that we are on board with all of that. And I can't even imagine. I mean, again, we let war criminals walk around now, so I guess it's really not that big of a deal. But I don't think we should be on board with these people, and I definitely don't think that we should. I mean, I'm not trying to say that we should have given Barack more respect and given him an opportunity, but he is, you know, holding of the highest office in the country, and he probably should have at least been told that this, you know, Netanyahu is coming. Obviously, the relationship between Barack and Netanyahu has been on ice quite a bit lately. It's not a it's a little frosty right now. So I don't know. What do you guys think? I can't imagine why we would invite this guy to talk to our country. You know, that's just me. Definitely want to know what you guys think. And apparently a lot of Americans agree with me, and that's not just me saying that. That's what this poll says. It was released by CNN, which is surprising that a CNN poll, given who owns their organization, would even allow the release of that information after the fact. But there you go. Here's a story from Albuquerque. I kind of like this. I don't like the story, but I like the ramifications of the story. And the Albuquerque Police Department now has implemented a policy over the weekend to run monthly background checks on every single one of its sworn employees in an effort to catch possible warrants on the department's officers. So they are going to be running monthly background checks on all of their officers. Why is that a new policy? Why are we not doing that right now? That doesn't make any, I mean, these guys should be held to a higher standard than everyone else, and perhaps we should keep a closer eye on them than everyone else. Maybe it's, I don't know, maybe that's just me. Maybe I'm old-fashioned, I don't know. But according to the Associated Press, again, the ADP or APD spokesperson there said on Saturday that driver's licenses of sworn employees will now undergo a monthly background check for possible warrant suspensions or expirations. The new policy was actually put in place after the arrest of an APD patrol officer over the weekend. He was arrested Saturday along with his wife because they have been smacking around their 12-year-old son a lot, apparently. And so they were arrested because Child Protective Services came and did a welfare check on this officer's stepson who has got bruises and everything all over his head. And so they arrested him for child endangerment. Hopefully he'll be fired and indicted. But because of him being a jerk, they essentially now instituted this new policy because abusive officer McClaskey here actually had a warrant for a welfare check that he had written that was a fraudulent check. So if they had already been doing background checks, they would have picked him up for this warrant for, you know, this fraudulent check charge, and probably would have kept them from having an opportunity to slap their kid around. So can I just say as a side note too, I'm just going to go ahead and say this. Let's say you were married and you got a divorce and you hate your ex. And I mean, you guys never talk. And I mean, you hate them. You're the father in this situation, and your wife marries an idiot who is slapping around your kid. I don't care who you are. Your job is to go protect your kid. I don't care about your relationship with your ex-wife. It doesn't make any difference. If your kid is in danger, that kid is part you. You now have my permission to go kick the crap out of the stepdad, and I will stand by you in court, okay? Because that's your job. And this kind of situation like this where you've got a law enforcement officer who's operating as a stepfather who's slapping around a kid, and there's nobody doing anything about it, that's a role that falls directly on the biological father, in my opinion. And, of course, I don't know the situation here, but – that's just my own take on this situation. So that guy wouldn't have had an opportunity to be arrested because he would not be breathing at this point if that was my kid. So anyway, let's move on. Talking about, what are we going to talk about now? I'm going to save those articles like I said I would for Rick. And let's talk a little bit about the economy because Happy days are still here, still above 18,000 on the Dow, 18,017. It has taken a little bit of a dive today, about 30 points, but again, not a lot. Not a lot of movement on the old markets today. I think I'll tell you what, this Greece situation again coming into the markets today. There was a headline that came out yesterday after the finance minister of Greece said that they were effectively not going to be interested in any kind of extension bailout program along the same terms of what they had already received from the Troika, right? So he came out, he said that, I think that was Monday, and then on Tuesday, there was an article, I think, put out by Bloomberg that said, oh, wait a minute, Greece is now going to be asking for an exception loan or something like that, an extension loan, an exception. And that's all they wrote. They just said, you know, which was basically a refutal of what the finance minister of Greece had already said. So the markets responded. They said, oh, okay, wait, they're not really going to turn away from the EU. Now it looks like they're actually going to go approach the Troika. So the markets went crazy in Greece. You know, everybody, happy days, were here again for about an hour. And then Bloomberg said, oh, wait a minute. That was only half of the headline. We probably ought to put the whole headline out that says that they're going to be asking for this extension loan that has in no way, shape, or form the constraints of the original loan package. That was the rest of the sentence, which means that the refutal was not actually a refutal. It wasn't actually good news, and the market's response to the good news was not really elicited because there was no good news. It was just more of the same, which is Greece standing behind its people and saying, we're not going to deal with the Troika anymore. So then you see the markets violently react in the opposite direction after the correction. I tell you, sometimes it pays to read more than just the headlines, ladies and gentlemen, especially if you're talking about investing. I just think that's maybe there's just a little moral lesson in there for all of us. Anyway, S&P well above 2,000. We're at 2,093 right now. The dollar index is up 94.49. Checking out some commodities here. Gold, oh my goodness. Woo, buddy, I hadn't checked that yet today. We're below $1,200 again, guys. 1,199. It is taken a $10 dive already today. Silver had a just absolutely crushing day yesterday. Doesn't seem to be taking it quite as hard today. $16.37 will get you an ounce of silver. We'll jump over into the Forex market here. Looks like the euro gaining against the dollar here a little bit. We're at 113.5, so a little bit of strength showing behind the euro, which is not very understandable given the Greece situation. But again, I don't understand economics because I was brought up to believe that it had something to do with supply and demand and fundamentals, and I don't think any of that exists anymore. So anyway, Bitcoin right now, $235 will get you a bright, shiny Bitcoin, although you probably won't actually get a bright, shiny Bitcoin because it'll just be on a computer. Okay, household debt right now. We got to talk about this right now. Student loan delinquencies have increased, so household outstanding debt increased $117 billion from the third quarter, according to the fourth quarter 2014 household debt and credit report from the Federal Reserve Bank of New York. The 1% increase puts total household indebtedness at $11.83 trillion as of the 31st of December just passed. Total debt now has gone up $326 billion since the fourth quarter of 2013. Most of this has to do with outstanding student loan balances. They stand today at $1.16 trillion, right? $1.16 trillion. Mortgages were already at the top of the list, $39 billion there, and student loans, $31 billion. These are the two new additions for this quarter in terms of the increase in debt. And auto debt loan and credit card debt also increased by $21 billion and $20 billion respectively. So again, more debt being created all the time. Welcome to the debt slave. Welcome to the Thunderdome, ladies and gentlemen. Oh, I already did that story about the Greek thing. That was really funny when that headline came out yesterday and the markets reacted. Then they had to retract it. Good stuff. France right now investigating magistrates. They have issued warrants, arrest warrants, for three former Swiss managers at UBS in connection with their investigation into whether or not the banks helped tax dodgers. And this is according to a judicial source, and according to Reuters, they just released this information on Tuesday. It's unclear right now if the managers worked in France or elsewhere within the Zurich-based bank. And obviously, a spokesman for UBS is declining to comment. But France right now, again, issuing arrest warrants for three former Swiss managers at UBS. So hopefully we'll see a lot more of these bankers start going to jail post-haste, ladies and gentlemen, post-haste. All right, I want to talk a little bit about oil, too. A lot of people Have no idea what oil is going to do. I'm one of them. I don't know what it's going to do. But it does appear right now that given the current analysis of everything that's going on, that the quantity of oil on the market is still increasing. We are still seeing a global growth in supply, and it does look like demand is not going to be raising up. So even Citibank came out last week and said that we could still see oil falling to about $20. It's been holding at about $52.93. I forgot to mention it this morning, but it is still about $52 right now. Lots of rigs being shut down in the United States, actually the fastest pace since the last financial crisis, and oil production still going up in terms of global supply. And in fact, last week, more oil was produced in the United States than at any time since the 1970s. This is not necessarily good news for the economy, because the price of oil, again, already catastrophically low level for the global financial system. And if the price of oil does stay at this level for the rest of the year, we're going to see a whole bunch of energy companies fail. Billions of dollars of debt issued by energy companies could go bad, and trillions of dollars of derivatives related to the energy industry could implode. In other words, this is a recipe for, again, financial meltdown, and the longer the price of oil stays at this level or lower, the more damage it is going to do. Somebody's giving me an indicator right now that the BDI, Baltic Dry Index, is at 509 today, ladies and gentlemen, and I think probably has a lot to do with the port closures going on, still continuing to be going on the West Coast. Also, we've got China in a holiday right now, so there's not a lot of actual shipment coming out of China right now, but the port closures and partial shutdowns at all the ports on the West Coast, man, that's going to have a big effect. I mean, there were Tyler Durden at Zero Hedge called that last week. Is that the lowest BDI ever, Smudley? I mean, that's significant. I knew that was a low number, but I didn't know that was the lowest ever. 509, ladies and gentlemen, for the Baltic Dry. That's a big deal. Big deal. There's a couple of interesting little gold articles here. Again, if you go to redpillreports.com, I would highly recommend checking out this one particular article talking about 200-year stocks versus gold price. It's actually a really good chart that was put up by mining.com. And it actually shows, given the 200-year cycle, they show the stock market and the gold market kind of in tandem on the same chart going back 200 years. Doesn't look good, ladies and gentlemen. It doesn't look good. It looks like gold could be heading for a pretty bearish turn here, according to what these guys at mining.com are saying. Again, who knows what's going to happen? We could have some other currency unpeg from the euro. This Greece, Grexit could definitely make some more safe haven buying of gold, you know, seem like something everybody wants to get into. So I don't know, but this is an interesting chart and probably worth looking at. So you guys might want to check that out. Again, redpillreports.com in the show section down at the news there. Highest BDI ever back in 1987. Truth be told is letting us know 11,700. We're down all the way to 509. Is that what it was? Oh my gosh. Wow. Crazy times, ladies and gentlemen. Okay. Moving away from the economy right now. I want to get into some tech news. Oh man, the Marines are testing right now this adorable little robot guard ball. I don't know what else to call it. It's a ball. It looks like a beach ball. It actually looks, you know what it looks like? One of those exercise balls that you would blow up and kind of do like, you know, your back stretches on, or your sit-ups on like that. But it's got little knobs all over it I guess it kind of looks like a big massage ball. And then it's got two little smaller balls on the side of it. I hate to say the word balls on the radio this often, but I don't know how else to describe this, guys. But it's a big black ball, two little silver clear balls with cameras in them. And this thing, it looks like something from the Transformers movies. And so essentially they developed this because they wanted to take it to Mars, and they were going to use it to roll around on Mars and look at stuff. But it didn't really pan out. So the Marines have decided that they want to use it for scouting missions and to kind of follow them or to go in front of them because obviously it's got cameras, it floats, it can roll through the water, it rolls on land, it goes between 3 and 6 miles an hour. But I'll tell you what, if you're in a war zone someplace and you see this thing roll up out of the water, I mean, this is some sci-fi stuff here, ladies and gentlemen. I've never seen anything like this. It's pretty ridiculous. And the fact that they're calling it an adorable robot guard ball, I just had to bring it up. Anyway, totally check this article out too at redpillreports.com, because this is interesting, and there's a little video that goes along with it. And again, this is some far-reaching, straight from the movies, future tech type of stuff right now, and it's completely functional. Looks totally, absolutely like it would work today. You know, they could be using this on the battlefield right now, and that wouldn't surprise me at all. Oh, I gotta talk about this too. Do you guys like honey? I'm a big fan of honey, and I've been thinking a lot, if I get a new place here soon, not only about doing a big straw bale garden, but I really want to get into beekeeping. I think beekeeping is just one of those things, that everybody should be doing. It's great for the environment. You get good honey. You can develop a little business. It's great for your gardens. But one of the issues with beekeeping is that there's bees involved. I don't know if you guys know that, but where the honey is, oftentimes you'll find bees. Bees, you guys may or may not know this, they sting the crap out of you, and that hurts. And I don't want to mess around with bees. I like the honey, not so into the bees. So, okay, these people, Stuart and Cedar Anderson, they have come up with a better way to harvest honey. And I can't believe this hasn't been brought up before, but this is a fantastic idea. They have made the honeycombs expandable. Okay, so the way that a honeycomb works, ladies and gentlemen, is that the typical beekeeping, you've got this box, and then you put these rails in there that are the honeycombs, and it's this a honeycomb type pattern, and the bees will pack those full of honey, which is their food, and then coat it with wax to preserve it, right? And typically what you got to do is you got to take those boards out, scrape all the wax off, put it into some kind of centrifuge extractor, and it spins it around, and then that's what flings all the honey out of these combs. This new program actually works inside the honeycomb. The little hexagonal combs itself are expandable. So you create, they turn a little crank on the side of the box, and it expands the honeycomb just enough to break the wax seal and to let all the honey drip out. And then they close it down. The bees come back and they say, hey, somebody took all our honey. And they, you know, chew all the wax off and fill it with honey again and start the whole process over again. But you don't have to get your beekeeper suit on. You don't have to smoke them. You don't have to mess with the bees. They're so much less stressful for them. It's just a super awesome idea. So I love this. No indication right now when this thing is going to come to market yet, but it does look like they do have functioning prototypes. And if you want to get into beekeeping but don't want to deal with the bee stings like myself, this might be something you want to look into. It's called the Beekeeper's Dream, and I think if you just look that up on wherever, YouTube or maybe just on the start page or whatnot. Again, you can find this article at redpillreports.com under the science and tech stuff. So there's probably links. I think there's links in the article to find out some more information. But man, what a cool! I love technology getting us honey, ladies and gentlemen. There's nothing about that I don't like. Also, have you guys downloaded Dumb and Dumber before from a BitTorrent site? Well, I got bad news. There are some kids who have downloaded the one of the finest films ever in the history of the world, Dumb and Dumber, obviously. And they're now facing legal action in Oregon. There's been several lawsuits filed in Oregon calling for Comcast to reveal subscriber identities so that the defendants can be pursued for damages. These are people who are using websites and programs like BitTorrent and using networks who are, those are online venues for anybody with an internet connection can pretty much get just about anything that they want. So now, again, they are cracking down in Oregon on people who are seeding or downloading and distributing Dumb and Dumber. So I don't know. Is this a major blow against a fine film? Probably. Okay. Japan right now. This is an interesting story. They've got more electronic vehicle charging spots than gas stations. The country's number two automaker, Nissan, says now there are 40,000 charging units, including those inside of private homes across the nation, compared to 34,000 petrol stations. So Japan moving way far ahead. Again, there is at the cutting edge of technology anyway, but moving far ahead and beating the rest of the world in terms of the old electric vehicles there. So that's kind of a good thing. Let's see what else we want to talk about. I did promise to talk about some health stuff, so we're going to jump over to that here real quickly. I want to talk about sugar, okay? And we're going to talk about this because I know there's people out there that eat a lot of sugar. The best kind of sugar for you is either contained in fruits as pectin or organic honey and organic maple syrup, all right? Pectin is the natural fiber found primarily in citrus fruits and apples, and it binds to cholesterol. It helps to flush it from the blood. You can lower your bad cholesterol as much as 10% in just 6 weeks by simply eating organic apples. And on the other hand, the worst kind of sugar is that which is refined, processed, and comes from genetically modified corn. This sugar is unusable by the body. It can cause cancer and diabetes, among other major health detriments. But even worse than the GMO high fructose corn syrup, which is actually a bug killer, and refined, bleached, white, processed sugar are the artificial sweeteners. Dad, I'm talking to you right now, which are synthetic, lab-made, toxic, and cause cancer in animals. Most humans cannot digest artificial sweeteners, and thus the digestive tract becomes confused and irritated, as do the organs and the heart and the brain. Okay, so the central nervous system of the human is not formulated to process an overload of toxins, and that most of our people pour overloads of toxins into our body on a regular basis, especially when it comes to this fake food that tastes sweet, right? It is not good for you. In the USA, two out of three people fit into the overweight category, and sugar is the main culprit, period. Half of those folks who are in the overweight category are tossed into another category known as obese. Again, sugar being the main culprit, be it processed or artificial. But get in line, obesity, because you are the only second to lung cancer as a leading cause of preventable death, okay? Refined carbohydrates are carbs that have been altered by machines to increase their shelf life to generate profits for corporations. You walk into any large chain grocery store and you see that 90% of the products are rife with refined carbs, including white sugar, white flour, white rice, white noodles, you name it. No country on the planet saves and serves up toxic food better than the United States. This is the trick, you see, okay? The choice is between two evils. Will you eat refined sugar or will you eat fake sugar? Both are processed. It's really sugar in the raw. Is it, what color is your sugar? Does it fizz after it dissolves? Does it leave a funny aftertaste in your mouth? That's the cancer. Hint, hint. Does your diet have you maintaining the same weight or are you putting on some new pounds? What is happening? GMO is happening. That's what. It's genetically modified obesity, ladies and gentlemen, and it's not really a mystery. Turn off the TV and listen to Dee McCaffrey from Sum It Up. He says, relying heavily on commercial food products, the American's diet is rife with refined carbohydrates found in white sugar, white rice, white flour. Examples include breads, crackers, pastries, baked goods, pastas, most commercial cereals, ice creams, chocolates, pizza, sandwiches, my favorite food, fast foods, and snack foods of all types. These products are so highly refined that the body does not even recognize them as food, and although most people don't understand their body's nutritional requirements, your bodies actually do. All foods found in nature, when eaten in their natural whole state, contain the corresponding nutrients and enzymes the body requires to properly digest that particular food. So don't let the foodocrats scare you off of organic fresh fruit for sweetness. Fresh organic fruit provides nature's best sugar. Remember to use only organic, local if possible honey or organic maple syrup for real smoothies, right? Remember to rotate your greens and don't be afraid to eat a little real sugar. A little real sugar is okay for you, but organic food is medicine. So just remember, keep the sweets in moderation, celebrate your organic life, stop eating the artificial pink packages or blue packages or whatever packages that we're eating nowadays, and you'll feel a lot better. Now, go exercise, but wait another hour because Rick Rozoff is going to be joining us after this 3-minute break. We'll be right back, ladies and gentlemen. Thank you guys for being here. Chat room filling up. I'm going to give you guys some shout-outs when we come back. Thank you guys for being in there. Rick Rozoff, NATO, Ukraine, Greece, Quagmire. What are we going to do? We'll figure it out here in 3 minutes, guys. Be right back.
Chris and Sheree Geo here, founders of Truth Frequency Radio. We just wanted to take a moment to thank all of you for making TFR the biggest and the best independent radio station out there.
When we first entered the alternative media scene in 2009, we were really taken aback by the amount of infighting, backbiting, fear-based reporting, and ego-driven personalities. That's when we knew we had to set ourselves apart and set a new standard in broadcasting. And thus, TFR was conceived as a listener-supported station with no corporate or outside influence and limited commercial interruptions.
You can support our efforts by signing up for a VIP membership at truthfrequencyradio.com/signup or by making a donation at truthfrequencyradio.com/donate.
For less than $4 a month, you can ensure that TFR continues broadcasting for years to come. Real people, real radio.
Wherever you are, make it TFR.
We are submersed in a construct that was designed to break us and keep us broken. But it hasn't. It failed. We still go on because we were designed from an eternal template of infinite creativity and not a synthetic house of cards built on pride and false power. Breaking free from the programs and paradigms that hold us down takes courage, endurance, tenacity, and trust. The reason it is so hard is because to be a free and sovereign being, we have to smash every lie, even if it hurts. It is good to be reminded of how resilient, unbreakable, magnificent, and powerful we truly are. And if anything provides a foundation for that, it is the book, Our Universal Journey. Go to ouruniversaljourney.com.au.
Judith Baker was once a promising science student who dreamed of finding a cure for cancer. This exposé is an account of how she strayed from a path of mainstream scholarship to a life of espionage in New Orleans with Lee Harvey Oswald. In her narrative, she offers extensive documentation on how she came to be a cancer expert and what led to her involvement in the development of a biological weapon that Oswald was to smuggle into Cuba to eliminate Fidel Castro. Details on what she knew of Kennedy's impending assassination and her belief that Oswald was a deep cover intelligence agent who was framed for an assassination he was actually trying to prevent are also revealed. Me and Lee by Judith Baker. Special JFK 50th Anniversary Signed Limited Edition. $30 including shipping. Limited number of these available. Order your copy today at federaljack.com/store.
This is the Truth Frequency Radio Network.
We are TFR.
Truth Frequency Radio.
Welcome back to the radio show. Ladies and gentlemen, thank you guys so much for sticking with us through that 3-minute break. And thank you all of you guys who are in the chat room today. It's just absolutely wonderful to have you guys listening along. And I definitely appreciate all the comments about all the articles that we went over. Cannot thank you guys enough for being in there. And right now, we're getting ready to talk to one of my very favorite people on planet Earth, ladies and gentlemen. And that's not something I say lightly. We're going to be speaking with Rick Rozoff. Rick Rozoff is an absolute genius when it comes to this NATO organization and the threat of militarization that's going on around the world. He runs a website called Stop NATO, and you can go to it. It's an email list, and there's also his website, which is rickrozoff.wordpress.com. The easiest way to find it, ladies and gentlemen, is just go to Google or Start page and just type in Stop NATO. The very first entry is always going to be Rick's, and it's a fantastic website. These guys update almost daily, and there's always news. There's always analysis from sources around the world, and he just works so hard to keep us abreast of what's actually going on with this whole NATO situation, and he's taking time out of his schedule to join us all the way from Chicago today. And I cannot thank him enough for doing that. So, Rick, thank you very much for joining us on the program this morning.
No, the gratitude's all on my end. I'm really honored to be on your show again, JD. Thanks for having me.
Oh, man, you're welcome to come back at any time, and especially given the direction that things are moving in the Ukraine and the speed with which they are moving in that direction. It seems like we could almost do a daily update about what's going on over in the Ukraine right now. And Ukraine really isn't even the tip of the iceberg anymore. And I think we'll have to get into that just a little bit. But Rick, I want some help. One of the reasons that I call you and I love you so much is because you always are so good and articulate at explaining exactly what's going on in the Ukraine. And I'm fuzzy on the situation, so I may be asking you some questions that seem a little bit elementary today, but again, I'm fuzzy because last week, and I'm sure you saw this, Barack Obama was in the news and he came out, and this is a quote. He actually verbatim said that we brokered a deal in the Ukraine. And I kind of, it brought me up to a point of repose, Rick, where I had to stop and I had to say to myself, JD, who exactly are we talking about brokering a deal with in the Ukraine? And what possibly could have been the conditions on the ground there that would have led to a position of the United States even being able to broker a deal with whomever we brokered this deal with? So that one particular situation really caused me to pause, Rick. And I want to see if you can maybe bring us back in time a little bit and explain to us the conditions that exist in the Ukraine now, but also talking about where they came from, how we got into this boat, and who exactly Barack Obama had the audacity to go and broker a deal with regarding the future of citizens of a sovereign nation, Rick. It doesn't make sense in my mind space. So anything you can do to help clear me up on that, I would be very appreciative, sir.
I mean, the situation is as complex and fluid and in a certain sense, I suppose, almost indecipherable as you portray it. So, you know, I have no advantage over you in understanding it because it's moving so quickly that the only people who I think would issue definitive statements are people who are operating from some sort of pre-existing schema. And the two of us, and your listeners, I'm sure as well, do not, succumb to that temptation to be always right or dogmatic or I told you beforehand sort of thing. We needed to spend with all those approaches, we're going to even attempt to understand the almost constantly evolving crisis. And indeed, let's use a word that's appropriate to the circumstances of the war in Ukraine, because it is that. It's some 310 days old now. that began on April the 15th of last year. It is nothing short of a war. And I think you're asking, you know, who the principal players are domestically, that is within the borders of Ukraine. They are the nominal government in Kiev, that of Petro Poroshenko, President and Prime Minister Arseniy Yatsenyuk, and U.S. appointed, in essence, second case, and in the East, what are variously identified in Western establishment media as being separatist or terrorist, militias and other armed groups in the Donbass region or basin, particularly in Lugansk and Donetsk. Those are the two, political players involved in what is clearly a civil war, full-scale civil war. Now, depending on which account you read and what part of the world you read it from, or it emanates from, you're going to believe that the U.S. and NATO have set up a puppet regime and are arming it to the teeth to perpetuate the war, my inclination, or that Russia has invaded Ukraine. That term, that verb, invaded, is being used frequently, almost as a matter of course, by mainstream media, government officials, and so forth. I can assure you nothing of that sort has occurred. Russia has not invaded Ukraine.
Right.
The Crimea last year was reappropriated into Russia. Something had been part of Russia for centuries. But nevertheless, what everyone thinks about that, this is not a military invasion. A military invasion is when the military forces from one country cross the borders of another in opposition to the people on the ground, and there's presumably a military conflict that evolves. That's an invasion. Whatever else one believes about Russian involvement in Crimea or in the Donbass, it cannot be characterized as a military invasion.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, that's a hyperbole at best, and it's a distortion of reality, in fact.
Well, I mean, I think that stands to reason, especially, my understanding of the situation, again, too, is that that's a relatively porous border. It's not a border between Ukraine and Russia that's, incredibly stiff. There's not a big wall there. People walk back and forth all the time. And, I look at the situation like if I've got relatives, say I live in Russia and I have relatives that live in the Ukraine and we're close and all of a sudden they're coming under threat of a NATO organization, I'm probably not going to wait for the government in Moscow to say, hey, go help your cousin or help your uncle out across the way there. I'm probably just going to put my old uniform on and just go over there and start organizing people. And I think that's probably more likely what's happened there, don't you think?
That's a wonderful way of, visual image is perfect. That's exactly what I think any sensible person would assume has occurred or would occur under comparable circumstances. Except that, in the question of being a porous border, a parliamentarian in the Rump Parliament in Kiev, the Verkhovna Rada, pro-government official, announced today again, this is something that's been in the news, by the way, for a few weeks, that a wall needs to be erected between Ukraine and Russia. Prior to the reabsorption of Crimea into Russia, I believe the total border between those two countries is some 1,500 miles. So we're talking about a Berlin Wall writ large.
Right.
And that's a demand now of the pro-Western regime in Kiev.
Well, I was just going to say, last time you were here, I think we were kind of outlining some of the requirements to join NATO, and one of them was that you got to have your borders under control. So that seems like that would be falling right in line with their effort of trying to get Ukraine NATO ready, so to speak.
Yeah, good point. Yeah, it's a good point indeed. But, we're also talking about, you think about the indignation, in Europe and throughout the world when the Berlin Wall was constructed.
Mm-hmm.
For all of, maybe 20 miles or something, I'm not sure, maybe 40 miles. Now you're talking about something, several times that separating two countries with a wall in Europe when, the NATOites and the Brusselsites, in the European Union as well as NATO are plotting, Europe free, whole, and at peace. I mean, how grotesque that sounds. I mean, that's actually their slogan. I don't know if your listeners know that. Europe free, whole, and at peace. It was initially it was a George H.W. Bush statement in a speech in Germany in Mainz in 1989 where he originated the beginning of that statement, whole and free. It's now, just to make it even more Orwellian, I suppose they've added at peace, and we can see what kind of peace there is in Europe right now, and there's a war raging for 310 days.
Right.
Threatening, by the way, by the moment to get worse. Today's news, for any of your listeners who don't know it, is a the Ukrainian government military forces evidently have been routed, you know, pretty severely, have withdrawn or fled in their entirety from a city that, you know, depending on whether you use the Ukrainian or the Russian name for it, is Debaltseve or Debaltsevo. There you were talking about, you know, well, Ukrainian government report this morning says 22 killed, 150 soldiers injured on the Ukrainian government side in recent days in that battle. It's full-fledged battle because this is war. And it, what it looks like is a, you know, pretty severe defeat, really an annihilation of Ukrainian government forces at that railway hub, as it's described. My fear, and I think, you know, you've anticipated me to some degree here, JD, is that when the U.S. or NATO client regime appears to be losing a military battle, is exactly the time we should get nervous, because that's when NATO and the U.S. are likely to intervene.
Well, and I think that, I mean, I'm not going to try and, let's call a spade, MH17. That was an attempt at a false flag. That was an attempt to get everybody riled up, and that was huge. What was it, 269 people, civilians, that are not with us anymore. Absolute tragedy. And my opinion is that it didn't work, you know, obviously, because we're watching Merkel and Holland and having discussions with Putin and Poroshenko and even the U.S. The U.S. is starting to even concede, even though it does seem like we're hedging our bets towards global conflict in that region. Even Barack kind of conceded and said we didn't see a military solution there. But it seems like MH17 would have been the perfect catalyst to bolster support internationally if it had been verified. And it seems like we've been waiting for verification on MH17 forever. And my fear is exactly in line with yours. The fact that we haven't heard anything about that means that there's probably a pretty substantial amount of evidence that it didn't happen the way that the NATO side would like us to believe that it happened, and that B, it wasn't effective. It didn't get this international coalition built up against Russia like we had hoped. So what in the world could be in store next? I think that that's a very reasonable question to be asking.
You're right, and most essential is there. I'd say the U.S. did succeed, and not convincing, because they don't have to convince their tributaries and vassals, as Brzezinski refers to anyone other than a bona fide U.S. ally. Their allies, tributaries, and vassals, you know, the allies, of course, are the fellow NATO members: Australia, Japan, South Korea, Israel, for example, Saudi Arabia, and all the other countries are divided into, you know, servants or slaves, essentially.
Right.
So that the U.S. doesn't have to offer any real incentive to get people on board. They just crack the whip. And what we did see, in fact, is that nations like Australia and Japan joined the sanctions regime against Russia as a result, largely, of the hysteria created over the, you know, the tragedy you remark. However, I think in terms of that being the catalyst or impetus for a direct military intervention, it would have had to have been acted on immediately, of course, you know, while the hysteria is a fever pitch. And once you know, was thanks to the internet in part, once we have time to kind of explore and investigate these stories and find out, you know, they try to corral us into believing it was, then, you know, the war fever tends to diminish, and it's not exploitable any longer at that point. But I'm thinking, for example, there's a story today that a member of the kind of ad hoc, or, you know, after the fact political bloc of Petro Poroshenko, it was not a political party, of course, before he came to power, but it's called the Poroshenko bloc, just like the old Timoshenko bloc, you know, Fatherland is a revealing name too, isn't it?
Yeah.
But a member of the Verkhovna Rada, a member of parliament, his name is Vadim Denisenko, told a radio, a television station in Ukraine today that he hoped that NATO would engage in bombardments, you know, much as it did in Libya, say, 4 years ago, Yugoslavia in 1999, against, in the Donbass region. And that's not, I mean, I don't believe that's immediately on the agenda, but that's certainly a prospective action. And particularly if it appears as though the U.S. And NATO are losing their strategic geopolitical gambit in Ukraine, they would resort to military force. I have no question about, I have no doubt about that.
Do you also, like I do, I think it seems like the coalition is starting to fracture a little bit. And it does seem like to me all eyes are kind of on Greece right now. Do you feel like Greece is going to be a major player coming forward into deciding which way the Ukraine goes, given their, you know, potential new relationship with Russia and the BRICS banks and all of that?
I would like to believe so, but I'm from Missouri on this one. I truly am. We've been disillusioned too often, I think, particularly in the post-Cold War period, where there appear to be fresh alternatives presented. It's always, you know, the same shell game. You know, it's the same con artists, you know, manipulating around the peanut shells or the nut shells. You know, the current Greek government, for all its bluster, has not only not renounced or expressed any intention of exiting the European Union, much less NATO, but I believe has reaffirmed its commitment to both those organizations, which means the enslavement of Greece, economically, politically, and militarily. You know, Greek soldiers fought in Afghanistan. They've been stationed in the Balkans. They will go wherever they're told as long as Greece remains in NATO. So, you know, short of a government anywhere in Europe announcing they are going to emancipate themselves from, you know, the shackles of NATO and the European Union, I wouldn't take anything they say seriously, frankly.
Really? Wow. Yes. Okay. Cause I've been really following their disclosures, at least from the new, finance minister there and, you know, the head of the Syriza party. They seem like from all the indications that I've read with their discussions with the EU, that they are looking for a 6-month extension that doesn't have any of the same constraints, that they did have before. And I know that Putin is gotta be just eyeing them thinking, hey, remember how much fun the Cyprus banks were? Wouldn't it be great if we could get our mitts on the Greek banking system? And you've also got the issue of Greece, you know, needing to participate with continuing to impose sanctions against Russia. So you could see now how Russia might have a little bit of a leg up, or at least a foot in the door to say, hey, you know, if you guys were to leave the euro, potentially we might be able to help you guys out. I don't know if you're following what's going on with the BRICS system very closely, but a couple of weeks ago, there were only 5 banks inside of Russia that were connected to their new alternative SWIFT program, which is like their international thing. Yesterday, it was 91. So obviously, they're moving to develop some sort of system that will allow them to circumvent sanctions. And I would imagine that anybody out there in a country that has got sanctions against them will probably want to be involved with the BRICS system. And I would think that that would be a really big enticement for Greece, and you just don't see it that way, huh?
No, I mean, what you're telling me is in many ways a revelation. I had no idea that it was that far advanced, you know, some of the alternative financial and banking strategies. But I still come back to, you know, to bedrock on this one, to, you know, to baseline. Today I put out a story where the U.S. Marine Corps' Black Sea Rotational Force, I don't know how many people and has for several years, which is in charge of NATO integrating some 14 to 17 countries in southeastern Europe and into the Caucasus, including Greece, incidentally, which of course has been a NATO member since like 1952-53. Okay. It's part of the, you know, that Marine Corps mission, and they just matter of factly that they have 500 troops exercising currently in Romania, you know, as part of Operation Atlantic Resolve, an initiative of NATO last September in Wales in the United Kingdom, aimed at Russia, clearly. But it just mentions in passing, you know, that they've recently engaged in military exercises with Serbian forces. Now, Serbia has a government, you know, comprised of, you know, the former Radical Party and the former Socialist Party, and maybe they still have those names, which, you know, talks real nice. You know, they're pro-Russian this and they're pro-Russian that, but they, you know, even today the Serbian press is, you know, if we make a concession on Kosovo again, another one, we might get into the European Union, and they're exercising with U.S. Marines in order to join NATO. So talk is cheap. Talk is cheap.
Okay.
And, you know, if people aren't going to make a decision about which side they're coming down on, and I'm not talking about Russia or NATO, I'm talking about non-alignment and peace. Uh-huh. Or being dragooned into and subordinated to an international expeditionary war-making force like NATO, and you know, all the progressive and fine and independent talk in the world means nothing if that chain is around your ankle. I mean, seriously.
That makes sense.
And if people believe, you know, these are incremental steps and, you know, first we'll do this and we'll do that. Look, we don't have decades. We have days. We don't have decades to change the world. Maybe weeks or months or maybe days.
Wow.
And I think we have to, I feel compelled to stress the urgency of what we're dealing with right now. You know, we'll get around to these issues later, of course, but we've been plunged into what many a time I've observed, perhaps on your show, as being a new global 30 years war. that is ravaging nation after nation, region after region, you know, former Yugoslavia, Ukraine, now Libya, Syria, Iraq, Afghanistan, Yemen, Somalia, Mali. Let's go all the way down the list.
Uh-huh.
And these are not traditional counterinsurgency wars or you know, cross-border incursions or wars. These are wars of total decimation and annihilation of nations and people. At the end of the day, there is no more Yugoslavia, as we know. There is no more Ukraine. It'll never be put together again. You know, with some 20 Coptic Christian pilgrims being beheaded in Libya the other day.
Mm-hmm.
And this is something many of us warned exactly something like this would happen 4 years ago. That it was inevitable that terrorism of this sort would be the result. You know, as with the invasion of Iraq in 2003 or of Afghanistan 2001. So that, you know, we're plunged into a situation that could not be any more catastrophic short of a, you know, nuclear exchange.
Right. No,
and
No, go ahead.
So I mean, talking about BRICS is nice. But, you know, we also have to remember that when the vote was taken in the United Nations Security Council last year, I think in May, on the question of Russia's reabsorption of Crimea, that not a single member of BRICS voted, or Shanghai Cooperation Organization, for that matter, fellow member, voted with Russia.
Yeah,
meaning they abstained for the most part, but, you know, they didn't even get support in the United Nations. So, you know, as to claims by certain web journalists that the Shanghai Cooperation Organization or BRICS is going to challenge NATO, you know, first of all, they're, you know, comparing apples to oranges. There's no possible comparison. And second of all, you know, maybe we could ease up, or Russia can have the sanctions eased up by, through some of the mechanisms you suggest. But in the long run, if what the West is entertaining is a military showdown, then I don't see how, you know, the financial arrangements with Greece, which would participate, by the way, in any war against Russia, as it would be obligated to do as a member of NATO.
Right.
You know, is going to affect that component of it. And if, you know, the plan that Russia through the Nord Stream natural gas project, you notice that's dead now. The South Stream project, that's dead. The Belene and other nuclear power plant projects in Bulgaria ordered to be, you know, halted by the U.S. embassy, and in due course it was. So, you know, if there, you know, there's a, I think, a interpretation that says that the Russian government, Vladimir Putin, in the first instance, is a master strategist who has played the Western powers off against themselves. There's no evidence to support that contention.
Wow. Okay. Well, I appreciate you clearing that up for me, because I really thought that Greece was going to end up being a sticking point. And I really thought, too, after watching some of the marathon negotiations that were taking on, you know, this weekend with it seems to me like Merkel and Holland are starting to run and kind of get a clear idea that maybe war on their doorstep is not really a great idea, and that perhaps, you know, if they were insulated by a large body of water like the United States, maybe poking that stick, you know, poking that hornet's nest with a stick wouldn't be as bad an idea. But I still see, like, you know, Merkel had some indication and Holland had some indication that maybe this whole coalition isn't really, they don't really want a military solution down there. And then there were some reports yesterday, and I'm not sure if they've been verified or not yet, but they were talking about Sweden and Norway both kind of saying, we're probably not going to be landing planes during those NATO drills in Estonia that are coming up next month, probably having something to do with the fact that their waters were infiltrated by a whole bunch of Russian submarines over the last summer. But what do you, I mean, do you feel like NATO is starting to get too big for its britches, so to speak? I mean, I don't know how else to put it. It seems like there are certain members of it that realize that because of their geographic relationship to Russia, and as well as some of the economic ties and things that they've got, that maybe this whole NATO drive to make Russia respond violently is not a good thing. I mean, you know what I mean?
I mean, you're thinking very sensibly, logically, humanely, and that's exactly
problem.
Why I, that's our problem.
Right.
That, you know, we tend to attribute to others the same motives or the, you know, as we have, and they don't have them. I mean, I may have mentioned to you before, but I can recall sometime last year, the defense minister of Germany, who's a woman, isn't that wonderful now? You know, women can kill and die with men. This is, you know, social progress in the West.
Definitely.
You know, we can be sociopathic killers also, and actually outdo, you know, the punks that are males. But the defense minister, Lyon, L-E-Y-E-N, was in the United States, and I happen to hear our national public radio. I have never heard such abject cringing She was in, you know, perfect English, of course, because there's no leader of any Western country that doesn't speak English. I mean, that's a real native tongue. Huh? You know, they condescend sometimes to learn the language of the country they're governing, just for public relations reasons, I suppose, domestically. But, you know, English is how they communicate with themselves, amongst themselves, between nations and so forth. So, you know, she was on the radio speaking English, as she's expected to be. I mean, heaven forbid.
Right.
She would speak German.
Language of finance, isn't it?
and of military. Military even more than finance.
Right.
So she was to the American audience, you know, apologizing for, you know, sometimes a little bit difficult, I'm paraphrasing her, explaining to the German people why we have to follow the Pentagon around the world into Afghanistan and the Balkans and so forth, and we have to be a doormat for, NATO and so forth, but rest assured, we're doing it, you know, at whatever cost to ourselves. I mean, it was painful to listen to this, frankly,
right.
You know, for anyone who has any, sentiment towards the German nation or people in particular, but anyone who has any residual illusions about national sovereignty in today's world, you know, particularly in the Eurozone or the Euro-Atlantic community, so that there are differences. I mean, Germany refused to participate directly in the war against Iraq, you know, in 2003, though they had their intelligence on the ground, you know, following and helping the U.S. Before the invasion and afterwards, and they refused to participate directly. Libya 4 years ago, but they compensated by sending 5,300 troops to Afghanistan. I don't know how many of your listeners know that under the NATO flag, German troops are engaged and have been engaged in combat for the first time since World War II. And moreover, in Asia and Afghanistan, where their forces controlled a healthy chunk of the north of the country, or that Germany recently announced they're going to continue their military presence in Uzbekistan. NATO has permitted the global expansion of the major Western military powers. You know, and they've been revived, France, England, Germany, Italy, the United States, and sent around the world. And, to believe that now they may have qualms. I think maybe that's what you're hinting at, right? That Angela Merkel or Francois Hollande are becoming nervous because this thing could blow up out of proportion.
Right.
But I still say when push comes to shove, they are obligated under NATO's Articles 4 and 5 to respond militarily. Whenever another NATO member, or for that matter, partner, I suspect, you know, calls upon them, they go back to the military committee and they go back to the North Atlantic Council of NATO, and they pass. And nobody's going to demur. Nobody's going to dissent. They will go along. You know, that's why I can't stress strongly enough. You want a free Europe and you want sovereign nations in Europe or in North America for that matter. You have to abolish NATO.
There you go. There you go, ladies and gentlemen. We got to go to 3 minute break. Please, everybody go to rickrozoff.wordpress.com. Or if you just want to do a search for Stop NATO, you'll be able to find his website. There's fantastic stuff. Always up to date. Cannot encourage you guys enough to go there. We're going to take a 3 minute break. We're going to be right back. Keep it right here. Please keep getting some good questions in the chat room. We're going to drag this conversation out.
Hey, Big Mouth. Yeah, you. Listen, I want you to put the word out on the street. Tell your coworkers, your family, your paisanos, that my good friend, Joe Joseph, is doing a good thing here. He's sticking his neck out for me, for Sil, and for all the people in the world. Isn't that right, Sil?
He's part of the family now, D.
That's what I thought. So tune in to him right here on Freedom Link, Monday to Friday, exclusively on the Truth Frequency Radio. Yeah, they're watching you. Big deal. They're watching me, too. They're watching everybody. So grow some cojones and give them something to watch and listen to. Make them earn it. Give them paperwork until they choke. That's right. I know you won't let me down. So you're going to put the word out about my good friend, Joe Joseph, right? Good. Now do me a favor and get out of here.
Doctors don't want you to know about iodine because it allows the body to heal itself quickly and permanently. Iodine Now is a complete powder formulation that will load iodine into the body with vitamin C for the best possible absorption. Iodine Now, available by the case and for protection from radiation, fluoride, chlorine, and bromine. including all heavy metals. We believe that this is the main element that humans need more than any other at this time. This formulation is infused with our bioactive aerobic rare earth nutrient powder that has a powerful negative charge that attracts positive toxins. Why not buy one product that does the job of 20 and saves you space, time, and money? Has a storage life of 100 years. All for about $18 a month. Call 888-910-4367 or visit hempusa.org. Call 888-910-4367. Bringing back the universal medicine for mankind. Iodine now. Only at hempusa.org.
We all know the importance of having storable foods. But what about when the food runs out? What then? For real food independence, you need a supply of non-hybrid seeds. Introducing the Survival Seed Vault from MyPatriotSupply.com. The Survival Seed Vault is sealed for freshness and includes 20 varieties of easy-to-grow non-hybrid seeds for only $37.95. For less than $40, you've got real food independence. And the Survival Seed Vault includes detailed planting and seed-saving instructions. Imagine the barter power you'll have when the food supply does collapse. Right now, save $9 instantly when you buy three or more Survival Seed Vaults from MyPatriotSupply.com. Same day shipping on all orders, plus free shipping on orders over $49. Call 866-229-0927. That's 866-229-0927. Or discover more emergency preparedness products at MyPatriotSupply.com. That's MyPatriotSupply.com.
Ministries with Kenneth Emanuel. Sundays on True Frequency Radio.
Welcome back to the broadcast. Ladies and gentlemen, thank you guys for sticking with us through that 3-minute break. I got to give a quick shout out to everybody in the chat room here real quick. I love, love, love having you guys in the chat room. I cannot thank Chris and Cherie Geo enough for putting the chat room in the show vault so that we can all have conversations along. But I just got to go through this list real quick. Pardon me here for a second, Rick. Want to give a shout out to Davey, Enemy Within, Eric Vorgan, Glenn's in there, Jim One's in there, John Titer was here. Love that name. Kev Baker Show, Kevin, the one and only Kevin Baker in the chat room right now. Ladies and gentlemen, Lex Luthor, Obsidian, and PK, Poet Fisherman, PRC News, myself, Robert RPR, Robert's Girl is in there as well, Smedley Butler, truth be told, cannot thank you guys enough for being in there. If you guys have questions for the one and only Rick Rozoff, that is a fantastic place to put them. I want to get back into our conversation about NATO and the Ukraine with Mr. Rozoff here. But before I do, Rick, how can people support you? I know that we can send people to your website, but let's say someone wanted to make a donation or to help you continue to do this fight. What can we do to help you out there?
Boy, thanks for asking that. You know, to be honest with you, at this point, until I make a decision to go full time on the support, I really could not in good conscience accept money because I'm not expending any. But that is something that I'm considering, and okay. I would certainly, you know, let you know in future.
So Girl Scout cookies are okay, though, like Thin Mints, or if we were going to send one box, what would the flavor be? You can't go wrong. You know, you can buy Girl Scout cookies online now. I mean, man, what a remarkable piece of technology that is. I tell you what.
Doesn't that defeat the entire purpose of the, you know, the social connection?
It very well may, but if it gets cookies into my hands more conveniently, then I'm in full support of it. I have to be honest. Rick, I want to come back to this Ukraine issue because there was an article this morning that came out, and I don't really understand it because I'm not that smart like our listeners are and like our guests are, but I'm hoping that you can clarify this and give me a little background on it. But there's been a report now that the ex-Georgian president, his name is Mikhail Saakashvili. Boy, that's a tough one to say. He's not going to be extradited from the Ukraine. I didn't know that there was an extradition order for him, but apparently he has now been appointed as a non-staff advisor to President Poroshenko. He's going to be heading the Advisory International Council of Reforms, which sounds utopian and wonderful, does it not? Who is this guy, and what's the background on this situation, if you have it, sir?
Yeah, I'm glad you picked up on that. A few days ago when I saw the initial report, I remember qualifying it when I, you know, sent it up on the StubNATO email list and also on the website with report. You know, Sakash really appointed to head up council and, you know, international council in Ukraine and so forth, meaning I didn't believe it. But sure enough, if there's, as you mentioned once again, there's no argument in favor of accident or fortuitousness in the world because everything that happens unpredictably is bad. And this is grotesque. This is, you know, somebody, let's remember who Mikhail Saakashvili is. He was educated at Columbia University. I don't know at the same time that the current president of the United States was there. I'd have to look that up. Ooh. But certainly when Zbigniew Brzezinski was teaching there, and okay. one wonders if the three of them ever got together for a beer or something else.
Right.
Nevertheless, he graduated from Columbia University with a law degree, practiced for a while in Manhattan, was described at one point as a typical fast-talking Manhattan attorney. The recent report was he's accepted this position with the Poroshenko Ukrainian, I put that in quotation marks, government, because, and he's one, by the way, of at least two Georgian, a couple Baltic officials. It looks like more and more of the inner circle of Poroshenko is anything but Ukrainian.
Right.
You know, from it's other parts of Europe for the most part. But the news reports I'd read recently is that Saakashvili wanted to be offered a position at Columbia University, his alma mater, and that he also has a millionaire or multimillionaire uncle in New York, and failing those two prospects. But I think more than any, your lead-in indicates, he was one step ahead of the law, you know, fearing that he'd be jailed and who knows what, you know, political murder. His, you know, his political mentor and the member of the triumvirate that evolved after the violent, thuggish, so-called Rose Revolution in 2003, you know, was died shortly thereafter. And, you know, the victim's family accuses Saakashvili of murdering him,
right,
or having him done. You know, nothing is you know, is too scurvy or scurrilous or disgusting or appalling to suit Western interests. This is the same Saakashvili, by the way, who, you know, every time you've come to the United States, either to the State Department and White House or to the United Nations, would be granted, try this, by the way, ask your listeners how many of them have ever asked and been granted this, you know, guest editorials in the three newspapers of record, New York Times, Washington Post, Wall Street Journal. Matter of factly, and, you know, his English is not terribly good, and, you know, these were ghostwritten, of course, as they always are in these circumstances, but this is a person who precipitated a five-day war with Russia in August of 2008, as the opening ceremonies of the Beijing Olympics were occurring. I guess Mr. Saakashvili, at the prompting of his American puppet masters, decided it was a nice time to launch an attack against South Ossetia, did so, you know, gambled wrong. I mean, he expected to get to a certain point, the Roki Tunnel and block off Russian reinforcements, didn't get there in time, and lost the battle. But for all of which, you know, he's now been rewarded with a key post as you know, major advisor to the democratic, transparent government of Petro Poroshenko in Ukraine.
Ah, it's just outstanding how much collusion is going on, you know.
And yeah, so, and if I could just tie in a couple of things, you know, his wife is Dutch, you know, heaven forbid he should marry a Georgian.
Right.
And I don't know if she speaks a word of the language, you know, the former, up until recently, the First Lady of Ukraine. Just as, you know, the Orange Revolution that followed his Rose Revolution model in Ukraine the following year, 2004, brought to power Viktor Yushchenko, whose wife, Kathy, is from Chicago, University of Chicago graduate, was in both the Ronald Reagan and George H.W. Bush administration and so forth. So, you know, you get some idea of who these leaders are.
Mm-hmm. You know, he's been living in the U.S. in exile this whole time, too, hasn't he?
No, I don't know where he's been. Again, you know, one step ahead of the handcuffs, but, you know, he's, basically is going to be persona non grata. A couple, 3 days ago, the, government of Georgia summoned the Ukrainian elevating to such a position somebody who is charges essentially in his own country or soon will be. And I think homicide is going to be one of them, as well as, you know, the war with Russia in 2008. But, you know, we were talking earlier about fissures, you know, within the Western alliance and so forth. Mm-hmm. You know, we have to remember for a moment, because I think people tend to forget this, these are not, you know, average citizens, civic-minded individuals who decide to run for public office. These are people, and I'm talking about all European leaders, who have been vetted very closely, right, not only by the United States State Department, I'm sure Central Intelligence Agency, but, you know, have as a precondition for getting to any political post, certainly at the federal level in their respective countries, have been, screened and, authorized by several, transatlantic, planning bodies. And I'm thinking, I don't know how many of your listeners know this, about 2 weeks ago, several of these, you know, unelected but, invisible government types, you know, power elite types, the Brookings Institution, Council on Foreign Relations, Chicago Council on Global Affairs, formerly the Chicago Council on Foreign Relations, the Atlantic Council, and please, you know, have all your listeners ought to go to Google and type in Atlantic Council or Atlantic Council U.S. if they want to find out who's really running their country,
right,
and who's really running the West as a whole. And these, you know, mechanisms have been in place. These are the planning bodies or the think tanks, so-called, that provided secretaries of state, NATO ambassadors, national security advisors, and so forth, you know, year in, year out. Victoria Nuland, who is, the architect of the debacle that is the Ukraine crisis right now, you know, was former U.S. ambassador to NATO under the George W. Bush administration, to show you how much difference there is,
right,
in foreign policy between the two political parties. But I'm saying all that to say that when, you know, we under the impression somehow Angela Merkel has some sense of loyalty to Germany, I'm sure she does not. She has a loyalty to the transnational elites that put her in power. And the same with Francois Hollande and these other European leaders. They can sue me for this if they choose to. But here's a quote from the head of the Brookings Institution, Strobe Talbot, who went to Oxford at the same time as Bill Clinton, was reported by some accounts to be Clinton's roommate, had positions in the State Department and Clinton administration. This is the Wikipedia entry on Strobe Talbot, head of the Brookings Institution. And the following quote is, in the next century, this is in the 1990s, 1992, in the next centuries, nations as we know it, you notice the disagreement in number there, nations plural as we know it singular, you don't have to be literate to be one of these things, will be obsolete. All states will recognize a single global authority. National sovereignty wasn't such a great idea after all, end quote. And that's quoted in Time magazine, July 20th, 1992. That's an authentic quote, and I have no reason to believe it isn't. I think this should tell us, you know, why there is no, dissension amongst the European countries, because they're all beholden to their respective Atlantic councils and transatlantic planning bodies of the sort, I alluded to.
Would you be one of those people like myself who put all of that under the international global banking cartel umbrella, really is running the show?
That's an integral part of it. And, you know, ultimately, you know, who pays the bill, calls the shots, who controls international finances, you know, is a major part to deal with. I mean, we know who these people are. They get together at Davos Economic Summit meetings each year, and then they creep away, including those, you know, with major positions in the United States at Bilderberg meetings, unacknowledged. Can you imagine, you know, the head of state of the mightiest country in the world disappearing for 2 days?
Well, I don't have to imagine it. It's what happens, you know. It's where we're at.
But nobody asks any questions, right? Reporters don't ask any questions. Where's your president? I don't know. He's gone someplace.
Right. Well, okay.
That's what we're talking about, right?
And since we're all focused on the Ukraine right now, and we know that this is not the only arena that these guys are operating in, let's assume for a second that this whole Ukraine situation is some kind of distraction. Where else should we be turning our attention to right now? You know, where are we not focusing, and where are we allowing them to make gains while we're all focused on Ukraine?
That's a very good question. It would not be the first time in modern history where a crisis is heated up in one area to deflect attention from another.
Mm-hmm.
I'm thinking of the simultaneity of the uprising in Hungary in 1956 and the invasion of the Suez. But I think there have been others of that sort, and I can only speculate on that. We do know, simultaneously there are military operations going on in probably at least half a dozen countries, with U.S. and NATO operations. Afghanistan is not over, though greatly diminished in terms of its scope. And, of course, there are still periodic drone attacks inside Pakistan. And as we know, the U.S. and company are still militarily intervening in Mali and Somalia.
Yemen seems to have just fallen apart in the last week as well.
Yeah, we had our, you know, foremost fellow democratic ally in the world, Saudi Arabia, bomb northern Yemen 4 or 5 years ago against Houthi rebels. And this is a case, you know, I hate to say it, you know, much like Cambodia, say, in 1970, where trying to eliminate a political opposition actually empowers them and they end up taking power. You know, I'm not comparing the Houthis to the Khmer Rouge, but I mean, it's that sort of scenario. And, you know, my contention would be this is pretty much what the West wants. They like fishing in muddied waters, and they're not averse to muddying waters, so to fish. And, you know, this idea, I think there's a, again, for people like ourselves who naively believe in, you know, the people operate under noble or at least honest motives. When you get to the governmental level, especially on the intergovernmental level we've been discussing for most of this program, no such assumptions, you know, hold water. And that, in fact, it's not, you know, certain strategists in Russia, you know, have been employing terms, or describing Western foreign policy, terms like creative destruction, controlled chaos or anarchy. You know, one almost has to believe in these, you know, the possibility of these being active plans, judging by the results.
Well, it's like you said earlier, it's like if any of this stuff was happening by mistake, every once in a while they would make a mistake in our favor, and that just doesn't seem to be happening. It seems to be all of these coincidences that just happen to be, you know, the worst case scenarios, like this Saakashvili guy, you know, happens to be very, very anti-Russian, has been anti-Russian for a long time, and all of a sudden now he's an advisor to Poroshenko. Coincidence, you know. It's the collusion level is just... it's just overwhelming. Here's my question for you, though. And I'm going to ask you to pull out your crystal ball a little bit, because I know one of the things you do at the Stop NATO site is trying, not only to, anticipate, well, not only to document what's going on, but also to kind of anticipate what's going on. So I'm just going to ask you the big bald question here. What do you think the world's going to look like 6 months from now? You know, what do we think, will be the developments in all of these arenas?
I wish I could tell you something better than what I'm going to say. I think the global war of attrition will continue.
Right.
It will, you know, potentially suck in new countries. It will wind down in certain areas temporarily, Afghanistan, Pakistan, war theater, heat up in others after having, you know, diminished for a while, like, there, you know, one burner or another can be, you know, turned at higher heat at will, apparently. So, you know, it's difficult to predict the exact. Now, who would have guessed that Egypt would be bombing sites inside Libya? But, you know, as of 3 days ago, that's what's going on. So, you know, barring any sort of international cooperation and principle, I think principle is probably, if we're talking about morality as much as we're talking about, you know, state, interstate affairs and so forth, unless there is a determination that countries cannot, major countries, U.S. in the first instance, cannot go around the world destabilizing governments, you know, singling out elected heads of state for being deposed. You know, I still remember the person who may very well be the next commander in chief of the world's sole military superpower. I'm talking about Hillary Clinton. About 2 or 3 years ago, you know, simultaneously ordering several heads of state to step down. Right. You know, in Ivory Coast, in Yemen, by the way, in Syria, in I forget where the fourth country was. No, I guess it doesn't much matter. Libya. You know, simultaneously ordering four heads of state just to leave. You know, we have decided by fiat that you're not legitimate. We have somebody waiting in the wings who incidentally was trained in the United States and worked for the World Bank or the IMF, as in Ivory Coast. And we have, you know, somebody just waiting to supplant you. Get out. Your time is up. Mm-hmm. I mean, this is a sort of, you know, arbitrariness and unilateral recklessness and criminality that's been occurring. Unless we decide that's not acceptable, then there's no reason to expect things to get better, just as I mentioned before, unless somebody, including the Russian government, by the way, which has never called for the abolition of NATO, you know, NATO's fine, you know, according to the government of Vladimir Putin. He has no problem with it until it steps on his toes.
Right.
But, you know, until somebody, you know, the world community or non-governmental, real non-governmental organizations get up and demand – you know, the abolition of military blocs, the condemnation of the use of military intervention to settle what are essentially economic or political or border disputes, unless we raise the level of discourse to, you know, considerably higher than it is right now, we have no reason to believe, and we probably don't deserve to have anything better than what we see right now.
Well, you get what you ask for, and you get what you consent to, I think, is what you're saying, essentially.
Yeah, if you ask for nothing, you get nothing, you can't complain.
Right. Roger that. Roger that. Okay, so just to kind of recap, though, you don't see Greece leaving the Eurozone, and just generally, you think they're probably going to stick with that, they're going to come to some kind of relationship, again, with the Troika, and just stick with NATO? You're pretty convinced that that's what's going to happen there?
Well, I mean, I'm salivating here. I mean, to quote Hamlet, it's a consummation devoutly to be wished. I mean, I sincerely hope that somebody breaks the link in this chain, but from what I've seen, there is no indication whatsoever from the new government that they're prepared to do any of that and suffer the consequences. Keep in mind, no country has ever left NATO. And I don't believe any country is ever going to leave NATO until NATO itself is disbanded. You know, the only country that ever left a NATO partnership program, ever, is a, you know, tiny island nation in the Mediterranean, Malta, and then was brought back in. So that, you know, this is a, you know, you want to talk about an iron curtain. Here's an iron curtain.
Right.
I mean, iron as in military. And, you know, once you get any way integrated into NATO structures, you just don't get out. You know, which itself, I would assume, is enough to alarm, you know, the international community or the conscience of humanity that such a monstrosity exists. You know, if a country does it, we should all be celebrating it. You know, maybe will be the beginning of a positive domino effect.
Well, okay, so let's say all of us out here that are listening to the show, we all want to try and get involved. You know, what should be the first initiative? I mean, do we take apart the global banking system? Do we do we dissolve NATO? And how can we down here on the ground affect change on such a monumental level? Because it does seem pretty overwhelming when you think about, you know, just the population of the people trying to step up against NATO, you know.
I may do this myself later today. I may call the Greek consulate in Chicago, but I'd encourage your listeners to email the Greek embassy in Washington and say, I heartily applaud the report that your government is preparing to leave the North Atlantic Treaty Organization.
Right.
And please notify me when that has occurred.
I would support that as an initiative. I think that's a great idea. I would encourage phone calls as well.
And if not, would you kindly explain to me why not?
Right. Right. Okay. Well, also then, since we were on the prediction topic a little bit earlier, I do want to know, last time we talked about, you know, the potential of Ukraine being brought into the fold of NATO. And it does seem like in the Minsk Accord that they kind of laid out some of the necessary requirements for joining NATO. Do you anticipate that will happen eventually, you know, 6 months or a year from now, that they will eventually get Ukraine under the thumb, so to speak?
Boy, that's a good question. I think you indicated earlier too, JD, that, you know, controlling the border, eliminating territorial conflicts, particularly violent ones, you know, inside the country. But most of all, you know, the absence of foreign, in parentheses, non-NATO military personnel in the country are the, you know, the basic, just, you know, bedrock preconditions for NATO membership.
Right.
We have to recollect that in 2008 at the Bucharest summit of NATO, a clear, unequivocal statement was made that both Ukraine and Georgia will be full NATO members. The only question is when and under which circumstances. But there's never been a question that the NATO is fully committed to the full membership of Ukraine as well as Georgia. The two are basically, you know, a couple.
Right.
They're being organized jointly. And that after the war with Russia in August of 2008, NATO granted a special annual national program to Ukraine in lieu of the membership action program, which is the traditional method, you know, to come into NATO as a full member. So, you know, they kind of snuck around the issue, but there's no question but that there's a commitment by the United States and NATO to bring Ukraine in as a full member of the North Atlantic Treaty Organization. I don't believe even the Vladimir Putin government will be able to tolerate that.
Meaning that
I think they've tolerated too much already, but I think even that, I mean, that rather is, you know, maybe more than the Kremlin even is willing to accept. They've certainly accepted being surrounded by NATO, haven't they?
Well, they seem to have, yeah. But what you're outlining, though, is that we're going to potentially see a major, major conflict in Ukraine. Because if Russia is not going to be prepared to allow that to happen, and NATO has already got Ukraine so in their sights, are obviously being, supported by the war hawks in Washington. You got John, for the love of God, McCain talking about giving these people defensive weapons. And, you know, and another issue that I think a lot of people are probably not clear on, is the same issue that we're running into in Yemen, the same issue that we run into any place where we go in and destabilize these countries, is that we put in these illegitimate governments and that we try and ask the people who still live there to support them. And so Poroshenko has been trying to mount this draft. He's trying to get 100,000 healthy, able-bodied men to go and fight their brothers over on the western side of the eastern side of the country there. And 6% showing up voluntarily right now. So again, we see this issue where once it's destabilized, there are people who live there. We call them insurgents, but they're really, they're people who are defending their home and the principle of their home. And how is it that these government people or the NATO people still think that we can, pay people money to go over and kill people who are fighting for principle? I don't understand that. It hasn't worked yet. And it still seems like that's the direction that NATO wants to go in Ukraine.
Yeah, it's even worse than that. Several times in the past week, Petro Poroshenko has talked about, and he's clearly going to enforce it, martial law nationally, not just in the war zone, but throughout the country, martial law. There's talk about universal conscription, release, registration of all males in the country. Okay. As of a week ago, talking about registering for draft purposes all females between 20 and 50 years of age.
Wow.
What we're talking about, and then, neo-Nazi-led, Pravi sector-led Azov battalions and, similar organizations, it's getting to the point where somebody doesn't show up, they're going to have a bullet put through their head. What we're talking about with groups like the Azov Battalion is basically SS units, the equivalent of that in Germany in World War II. And, if you don't go along with the game, you're going to be killed.
Mm-hmm. Well, I got to keep coming back to that point that you made and that I completely believe in, is that, what would really bolster the national draft initiative would be some sort of attack from Russia on near countrymen. And I think we are knee deep, and if not deeper, in prime time false flag territory for something to get, 6% coming out. If they're going to have to move to 100% conscription, that's a very significant move. It would seem to be way more cost effective to just drop a bomb and blame it on Russia to get get your numbers up. But, I don't know.
Right. Your martial law also goes a long way towards enforcing something like that.
Mm-hmm. Well, Rick, I've got to let you go because I know you, took time away from your lunch, and I really, really want to thank you once again for joining us on the program today. This has been very insightful and, very educational, and I'm very, very thankful for you taking out time from your schedule to appear today.
No, thank you in return, and do be kind enough to send me the link when it's available.
Oh, yes, we'll have it up in about 15 or 20 minutes after the show, and I appreciate, again, you being here. Want to encourage everybody, again, do a quick search for Stop NATO, and please try and, maybe just send some emails of encouragement to Rick for doing what he's doing. He works full-time, and he does all this on a part-time basis, and the amount of information that he puts out, the insight that he brings, is just second to none. So anything you guys can do to support him out there, I would really appreciate it. And thank you guys, all of you in the chat room today, for keeping us company. It was a big day in the chat room, lots of new people in there, and it was just awesome. Really appreciate everybody showing up and taking part in the show. Want to give you guys another heads up about tomorrow's show. Deborah Tavares is going to be joining us, and we'll be talking about all kinds of scary things, but I promise all of them are documented and true, which I don't know if that makes you feel better or not. Andrew Gauze will be here on Friday. And if you stick around with TFR right now, the Liam Sheaf show is coming up next. That's a newer show here on the Truth Frequency Network. And definitely want to encourage you guys to support the other hosts. Continue to support the network. We could not do it without all of you. And we'll be back tomorrow to pick it up where we left off. Deborah Tavares, lots of news, lots of insights coming at you again for another Daily Dose of Deprogramming in the morning. We'll see you guys tomorrow. Take care. Talk to you then. Bye-bye.
Truth Frequency Radio is your number one source for news and information. Without the hate, hype, and fear, we are proud to bring you cutting-edge programs like The Kev Baker Show,
The Christopher Everard Show,
The Freedom Link with Joe Joseph,
Truth Frequency with Chris and Shuri Geo,
Red Pill Reports
with J.D. Moore,
X-Squared with Brooks Agnew,
Down the Rabbit Hole with Popeye.
Freaky Friday
with the Woo Crew.
Waking Up the Masses
with Robert Bruce.
Phoenix Rising Radio
and dozens more.
Did you know you can listen from any computer, mobile device, or from any telephone by dialing 832-225-5308.
Or call into your favorite show toll free at 866-37-TRUE.
Uncensored talk and news you won't hear in the mainstream media.
24 hours a day.
Truth Frequency Radio. Wherever you are, make it TFR.
Truth Frequency Radio.